The Andy Finn Show is back, and I'm here now with Brian O'Connor. Brian is a drug and alcohol counselor in the Seattle area who's in town this week for a conference downtown at DAR Constitution Hall. And Brian, why don't you describe that to me a little bit, the conference you're at?
That's a conference involving the Dalai Lama and a group of neuroaffective scientists, as well as psychologists, as well as some doctors who are all engaged in a process of trying to discover how meditation may help in the field of mental health as well as in areas of physical health. And there are maybe 2,200 participants at this 2.5-day conference, which the Dalai Lama is an active participant in for all of.
And it's about half academic researcher types, if I saw from the program, and about half practitioners, that is, people who you would think of as yogis or Buddhist practitioners who practice probably meditation and yoga.
These, they describe themselves as contemplatives, and it's an interesting mix in that group because some of these folks actually have a background in science, like one who's a molecular biologist who's also a monk, and one who was a monk for over 10 years but is now a psychologist with a PhD from Stanford. And the other group of scientists do research, but many of them are also actively working with patients. And so that this is not just a process of research, but they've actually got patients that they're actually trying to see if, in fact, the benefit of their research is being helpful for their patients.
Well, let me back up and talk a little bit about your background and your interest in this conference. Now, you are were born and raised Catholic, but you would consider yourself a Buddhist now, is that right?
I've had a Buddhist practice since, a joint friend of ours introduced me to Buddhism, and I had an ongoing interest in it and actually left for India in 1972 and began to explore it. And in 1974, I actually started a serious study of it at Naropa. And by the time I was finished in 1979, I'd been practicing meditation for probably 5 years on an active basis. And that has continued up until this day. And I think I began to think of myself as a Buddhist because I realized that was the ongoing practice that I was doing every day. And when people would say, "Do you have a religious belief?" I would say, "No." But when they would say, "Have you got some kind of spiritual practice?" I'd say, "Yes, it's a Buddhist practice." So I just began to think of it, well, I don't know why I'm not saying Buddhist, because
that's
it's probably
right.
True.
And otherwise, people assume you're some kind of heathen. You know, I don't want that label, so I tell people I'm a Druid. But so when you say a Buddhist practice, tell us what that entails for you.
Well, it's twofold. First of all, it's a daily practice that I do twice a day in the morning and then again in the evening. And it's a meditation that involves focusing on your out-breath. And you sit in a straight-backed way. You could sit in a chair or you could sit on a cushion. And you sit with sort of a soft focus with your eyes about halfway open. And I mean soft focus. You're not looking at anything in particular. You just got your eyes open. And you're aware of what's coming to your eyes, what's coming to your ears, what's coming through the physical experience of just being present. And you're noticing your out-breath. And part of the point of that is because you're continually letting go when you're paying attention to breathing out.
Uh-huh.
And then what happens is that you notice thought and you notice feeling. And when that happens, you just let it go. And you may notice that you're gone for a while into that. And the moment you recognize it, you just come back to the experience of just being immediately present. And that, in the most basic way, is the meditation practice.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there are different types of meditation. We won't get into that tonight. And then is there another component? You do that twice a day?
Twice a day.
For roughly how long?
In the morning, it's for half an hour. In the evening, it's 15 minutes.
Okay. And then do you do other... at one point, you had a practice of doing yoga, didn't you? Do you still?
I did yoga for a number of years, but I haven't done it now for years. But the other part of the practice is in the process of psychotherapy. Because along with doing drug and alcohol counseling, I'm also a licensed mental health counselor, and I spend a lot of time with clients every day, and there's a practice that's done in session with them, which is really being attentive to them and just letting go of my own thought process and continually coming back to the experience of being present to that client's experience. That's the other part of it. So there's a mindfulness practice that takes place in the room when I'm sitting with a client.
Yeah, and I mean, a communication scholar like myself would simply say what you're practicing is active listening, or a particular kind of listening that we all should practice, and most of us don't listen very well.
Correct. And this is an actual practice that, of course, you can do that improves your ability to hear.
Yes, that's interesting, because I've come at that from other directions. You know, I have some interest in Ken Wilber and his integral practices, which we won't digress into right now, but also in some of the other personal development courses I have done, they talk about generosity, and not about giving money, but about being generous to the people in your life. So part of that is, we would say, unconditional positive regard that a therapist should have for a client. That is, you accept the person for who they are. But secondly, generosity is accepting their motives, seeing our common humanity with other people, rather than immediately being cynical and wondering what they're up to and what they want, and, you know, immediately assuming all kinds of motivations to the other person. And when you can be generous in your listening and can actually sit there and hear somebody say something as though you've never heard it before, because most of us go to, oh, I know what you're going to say. If it's an old friend, we already know all their shtick, you know. And so it's really hard with people, particularly people you know well, to listen generously, because we already have preconceived notions of how the conversation's going to go. And I think therapists probably are that way too. You've heard it all before after a certain point, right?
No, that's the wonderful thing. Because you see, the thing is that no two people walking in my door are anything like anybody else I've ever met. And no two people ever present a problem in the same way. And so I think that, first of all, it's a fresh experience just because I don't know the person and I'm still learning about them. But the second part of it is that what I am well aware of is that the freshness of that experience helps keep me alive and available, and also keeps my work alive and available and interesting. And so this is something that I'm doing for myself as much as I'm doing it for my client. And so there isn't really an experience of, I've heard this before. And that's one of the wonderful things that comes with this.
Good, good. Well, I was just implying that that's the kind of trap we can fall into over time when we're doing similar things. And I assume that that's part of what the mindfulness practice of listening is about. Now, let's move on to this current conference. So start your impressions of, well, whatever you want, really, but I was going to say your impressions of the Dalai Lama first.
This is the third time I've seen him and been in his presence. And each time it's quite amazing, because this guy has an atmosphere around him. He has an air about him. He is somebody that his presence has an immediate impact. And it doesn't matter if you're in a crowd of 10,000 people, doesn't matter if you're in a small group. The group that we're in is about, I think 2,200 people. So it's fairly small. And when he comes in, what's immediately obvious is that he's paying attention. And he's paying attention to all of us. And he walks up to everyone on stage and greets them. And there's an immediate sense of connection to the world, to the immediate environment that he's in, and to all of us. Then you get beyond that a sense of, this guy, despite the fact of being a politician, despite being a religious leader, despite being a writer who is actually fairly well known for that, this guy, and now actually with a strong scientific interest that's been going on since the early 80s, what you get is a man who's very humble and who's just very unaffected. It's just amazing. And so that quality, it's enough. That quality by itself is enough to make you want to sit there and just be with whatever it is that he's going to be doing. Then add to that the context in terms of what's actually happening at that conference.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about, in particular, the Dalai Lama. But what I'd like to do is back up after the break, come back and talk about who he is and what his position is in the world for people who may not know.